Barbara Mikulski, Maryland's senior Democratic senator, announced her retirement this morning in Baltimore. Mikulski, a social worker and community activist, first went to Congress in the 1970s. She was elected to the Senate in 1987 and became the longest-serving woman in the history of Congress in 2012. In this hour of midday, more on the Mikulski announcement from WYPR senior news analyst Fraser Smith and from Washington College political scientist Melissa Deckman, and your phone calls, your assessment of the Mikulski years, and what her announcement means for Maryland Democrats, starting with former Governor Martin O'Malley, who aspire to higher office. Midday on Mikulski, after the news from NPR. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Our second hour, Dan Roderick's here. The news is about Senator Barbara Mikulski, who has served in Congress longer than any woman in history, announcing this morning in Fells Point that she would not be seeking re-election. 410-662-8780 is the phone number to call us on Midday to comment about this. Barry Raskovar is here from Political Maryland. Nice to see you, Barry.
Nice to be here.
Fraser Smith will be joining us again, WYPR senior news analyst. Melissa Deckman, who joins us from time to time to talk about Maryland politics from Washington College. She'll be with us as well, but we'd like to hear from you to get your reaction. Again, 410-662-8780. So Chris Conley is here from the WYPR news staff, who went to the Mikulski announcement this morning starting around 11 a.m. Chris, nice to have you with us again.
Happy to be here.
So we didn't know anything about this until about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, when there was a notice that there was going to be an announcement, right?
Yeah, it came kind of out of left field. I think a lot of people were surprised by it. Not to skip ahead, but Ben Cardin was at the announcement, and he took some questions, and he said he found out yesterday, and it sort of took him by surprise. He said, you know, she's at the top of her game. She's getting up there in years, but she's still, I mean, very powerful and a great mover and shaker there.
Tell us what she had to say a little bit. Let's get some of that from you, Chris, and then we'll get some comment from Barry, and Fraser Smith will be joining us by phone.
So she said that her decision, first and foremost, was not based on, you know, sort of frustration in the Senate or with Washington gridlock. She said when she thought about how she wants to spend the next 2 years, it was a decision between fighting for her constituents, fighting for issues, or campaigning and fundraising. And she said, you know, ultimately, when it comes down to it, she'd rather spend the time working on issues that she cares about, doing constituent services, rather than in campaign mode, which takes up a lot of time.
Okay, and that's primarily it?
That's the reason that she gave. She was also asked about possible replacements for her. Yeah. She didn't want to name anybody. She made a quick joke that, you know, we'll all find out very soon who's in the running.
So. She's 78 years old. Barry, I'll go to you. Are you surprised, first of all, are you surprised that she announced that she's not running again?
I think everybody is surprised by that. Everyone was under the impression that Barbara Mikulski, to use an old expression, would die with her boots on, that, you know, she would be in the Senate till the very end. So this does come as a very big surprise, and it really shakes up Maryland politics in a big, big way. And beyond that, it is a very harsh blow for Maryland. Barbara Mikulski's influence as far as on the Appropriations Committee that she chaired and now is the ranking Democrat in the minority on that committee, you know, it's there that she was able to secure large amounts of funds for Maryland, Chesapeake Bay cleanup, et cetera.
All kinds of things.
You know, and she was really the person in Washington, the go-to person to get funds for Baltimore City, for instance. She's not going to be there in 2 years. So it's a real blow for the state.
Fraser Smith, we spoke to Fraser last hour. He's with us again by phone. Fraser expressed surprise as well that Mikulski has decided to retire. Fraser, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you again, Dan.
You know, in all of our speculations about Martin O'Malley, I go to him first because he just left office as governor.
we were looking at different scenarios. You know, if O'Malley leaves office, what does he do? He's thinking about running for president. If 2016 isn't his year to be the presidential nominee of the Democratic Party, what does he do in the meantime? And then the Mikulski seat always comes up, right? So let's unpack that a little bit. First of all, Barry, let's start with you on that one. You know, the scenario would be she steps down and provides an opportunity for O'Malley to stay, have a high-profile position, be a U.S. senator, possibly seeking election to president another day down the road.
Right. Well, Martin O'Malley has a difficult decision to make. For you and I, it would probably be easy because the odds are so long that he could become the Democratic presidential nominee. The last poll in Iowa had him running almost last. You know, his campaign is getting some publicity, but that's about it. And once Hillary Clinton announces, it's really over for him. So this comes along at an extremely opportune time. It allows him to bow out gracefully, if he wants to, from the presidential campaign. And then he can use the money he's already raised to run for the U.S. Senate. And this is ideal because, you know, what was O'Malley's future going to be like if a Republican becomes the next president? Then he has no future in politics whatsoever. This would give him a quasi-permanent seat in the U.S. Senate, a position from which you can very easily run for president, say in 8 years or even 12 years, because, you know, he'll still be in his mid-60s by then.
Frazier, your comment on that, it's just speculation. We're speculating here. Would Mikulski make this announcement without sort of hatching a deal with somebody? What do you think?
Apparently she has done precisely that because nobody knew, and I think just about everybody in the political world saw her taking the temperature, the political temperature, to try to figure out how she could accommodate herself to what I think she realized was a different playing field. And, you know, I think despite what she may or may not have said about this, she is regarded as somebody with pretty good instincts, pretty good sense of which way the wind is blowing. And she may just have wanted to leave without a defeat, you know, and if she thought that was a possibility, then this might be the kind of decision that she would come to.
Well, on this one, I think Frazier and I disagree. I think she breezes to reelection. I think one of the things that had her come to this conclusion is that she didn't want to go through the nasty business of fundraising and campaigning statewide. It's a very grueling thing to have to do. And at the age of what would be 79, to do that, it's not at the top of her priority list, I'm sure. The other thing is that she's now a member of the minority in the U.S. Senate, which means she plays second fiddle on budget and appropriations issues on her old committee that she used to chair. And that's no fun. The Republicans are going to call the shots, and she's going to have very little voice in what happens in the Senate. That, given the case, do you want to spend the next 8 years in the Senate? And I think her answer ended up being, no, I don't.
410-662-8780 is our number here. Please call in and let us know what you think about Barbara Mikulski's announcement today, but also reflect on her career. This is a person who's been around for as long as anybody can remember around here. People remember the beginnings of her career. Frazier Smith, we'll go to you for some of that. Back in the 1970s, a fight over a highway that was going to go through Canton, right?
Yes, I was going to go through the neighborhood that she represented.
Yeah, Frazier, you got a little bit of background noise there. Barry, this was a fight. She was a social worker. She became a community activist.
Yes, she became a community activist over building the interstate highway through basically East Baltimore and her Highland Town neighborhood.
Let's go over that for folks who may not know this story. This was supposed to be I-95 or 83? It was supposed to go.
It was I-95.
I-95 was going to come down and cut. What was it going to do? It was going to go over the harbor or something, wasn't it?
Yes. This was
Fells Point.
It was Fells Point, and it was going to cut through, tunnel through downtown Baltimore, and then it was going to come out by way of Edmondson Avenue The road to nowhere.
The highway to nowhere.
Yeah, right. Right. And Mikulski was the leader in the opposition. That's how she got into politics. She parlayed that into a city council seat. It's interesting that before all that happened, that was the first time I met her. It was in the early 70s when I was a Cub reporter was assigned to do a piece on the Community Action Agency, the anti-poverty group for the city. And I went out to what was then Baltimore Junior College to interview the chairman of the CAA, who was a man named Clarence Blount.
Oh, Clarence Blount, who became yes. U.S. A state senator.
Became a state
was
senator.
That, was that on Howard Street?
No.
Where was the...
On Liberty Road.
Liberty Road, okay.
Right, so I get out there, and there's this bowling ball of a woman in his office. He introduces me as a sociology teacher there, Barbara Mikulski. And we talk about the anti-poverty program. And so that was my introduction to her. But from there, you know, from those beginnings, as the daughter of a guy who owned Mikulski's bakery in Highlandtown, she parlayed that into being a feisty and outspoken councilwoman, and from there became a member of the U.S. House of Representatives and then the U.S. Senate. So really you're talking about, 45, maybe close to 50 years
wow.
of political activity.
1976, I was saying in the earlier hour, that's when I met her. She was running for Congress. Jimmy Carter was running for president. It was Election Day, 1976, in Mimi DiPietro's district at Claremont and Eaton Street. The electioneering was going on there, and Paul Sarbanes was running for Senate that year. I think she took Sarbanes' seat in
Correct.
1976.
Yeah,
Frazier, some of your memories, if you don't mind, sharing some Barbara Mikulski memories from your time as a reporter at The Sun.
Well, one thing that I remember or that I learned after I got to the paper was that she, when she was on the city council of Baltimore, she ran against Mac Messias, and right from the council. I mean, she wasn't in the House of Representatives then at all, but she'd already gotten such a name. She was pretty much part of the folklore of political Maryland, and she got 43% of the vote, but I think she kind of established herself as somebody who could win down the road. And the thing that comes to mind a lot with her, of course, is what a demanding boss she was. She made her announcement today in South Point, is that right?
Yes,
we were just talking about that.
Well, I was down there the last time she announced, and I walked down, I got there early, and I walked through the little esplanade there, and I saw some people on her staff that I know, and I said, well, this must be a pretty tense morning for you all, and they said, no, it's we're not tense at all. Whatever we do will be wrong anyway, so we don't get upset.
One of the recollections I have about Barbara Mikulski is having covered her as a reporter and as a columnist at various meetings and events, whether it was a rural event or an urban event before a liberal crowd or a conservative crowd, somehow she was always able to tailor her remarks in a way that had people applauding and cheering.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rare feat where a politician can do that.
Did you actually see her in front of a conservative crowd?
Yes.
Which you describe as, and she worked it pretty well.
She worked it beautifully.
Because I think I've only seen her in settings that seem comfortable to her politics, which is more to the left than it is
to the right.
Although I don't call her the ultra-liberal some people think she is. I think she's a centrist on a lot of issues.
Or she can be. She votes contrary to liberal ideology enough times that when she goes before a more conservative group, she can talk about those votes.
Right.
And she can whip them up into a frenzy.
I'm an industrial strength environmentalist, is one of the things that she said. Listen, we'll take a break here. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. We welcome your calls about the big news today. About Barbara Mikulski not running for the U.S. Senate in 2016, serving out her term, which ends in January 2017. What do you think of that? What do you think of Barbara Mikulski as a public official, a public leader over all these years? We'd like to get your reflections. Dan Roderick here with Barry Raskovar from Political Maryland. A short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday. Is Frazier still with us? Frazier Smith? Excellent. So, Frazier, you hang in there, and we'll get you on here. In the earlier hour, Chris Van Hollen's name came up. Frazier mentioned Chris Van Hollen as a possible candidate for this seat. Is he on the Barry Raskovar list?
Oh, yeah. There are a slew of people. This is going to be a stampede of people considering running. The problem is most of the people considering running are in the U.S. Congress, which means they have to give up their seat, a very valuable, hard-won seat.
Chris Van Hollen is one example of that.
Chris Van Hollen, Donna Edwards, who is not well-known in this area, but is a darling of organized labor. Elijah Cummings is a possibility. Paul Sarbanes' son, John, a congressman, another possibility. And, of course, John Delaney, the millionaire congressman from Montgomery County and Western Maryland, is another possibility. And then throw into the mix Labor Secretary Tom Perez, Heather Mazur, who ran a very respectable race for governor, and, of course, our friend Martin O'Malley, and holy mackerel, what a primary that would be. But most of them will drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them will not make the plunge because you have to you probably have to raise $3 to $5 million or more to win this primary.
How much does O'Malley have? Do we know?
I don't know. Frazier might know, but he has been raising presidential funds that he can turn around and use.
Yeah, I would think of all of those, except for maybe John Delaney, O'Malley has the most money to spend on a campaign. I would guess at this point.
I would say O'Malley and Chris Van Hollen would be the ones who could raise the most money. Van Hollen has been a prolific fundraiser and campaigner around the country.
Mm-hmm.
She's really been Nancy Pelosi's surrogate in trying to support Democrats running for Congress.
You don't have Steny Hoyer's name here.
I think at Steny's age, he'll probably stay where he is. I'm not sure how Steny would win this election or raise that amount of money representing Southern Maryland. It would be difficult for him, and I think right now he's got enough of important work to do that he's probably going to pass this one.
Frazier, what do you think of Barry's list, and would you add anyone to that, or maybe take anyone off?
Well, I think that's probably the lead list. It's the one I've been hearing this morning. You have to imagine that whoever wins will be somebody that can navigate the Democratic primary, obviously. And so, you know, Donna Edwards, though not well known in Baltimore, becomes an interesting potential candidate. I mean, of course, she's a woman. She's very outspoken. And, you know, she's probably more progressive and liberal than Barbara. You know, and she'd be running in a primary with quite a large number of black votes. So, you know, it's pretty wide open, I think.
You have to remember that the primary we're talking about is in April of 2016, right. not in September.
Right.
So it's a little over a year away. It's not far out. So
and it's not a long time.
It's not a long time, especially after if you have to raise millions of dollars to do that. And in addition to that, you have to look at the fact it's a presidential primary, which means that the turnout's going to be heavier than normal. And it could be heavier than normal as far as the turnout in the African-American community and among liberal Democrats coming to the polls. If that's the case, does it favor? On top of those interesting elements, you also have the geographic splits. Chris Van Hollen is a Montgomery County congressman. He's going to do extremely well there. Donna Edwards is a Prince George's County congresswoman. Neither are well known in the Baltimore area. But then you might have Elijah Cummings. You might have John Sarbanes and his last name. You have Martin O'Malley, who'll do extraordinarily well in the city.
Boy, this is really interesting.
It could all boil down to, once again, how Baltimore County votes.
Yes, Baltimore County. Melissa Deckman's joining us next, Barry. Melissa Deckman's been on our show before, of course, a political science professor and chair of political science at Washington College. So, Melissa, thanks. You just heard us going over the list about who replaces Barbara Mikulski. But before I go there with you, I wonder if you just talk a little bit about what Barbara Mikulski has meant to women in politics, specifically that, because I know that's an area of interest to you.
Yeah, I think that this is definitely the end of an era in Maryland politics. And I think it's also sort of a blow to women in politics. You know, Barbara Mikulski was, or I guess still is, for another year at least, the longest-serving woman in Congress. And she clearly remembers a time of what it's like to be a very small minority. You know, when she was first elected to the Senate, I think it was just her and Nancy Kalsenbaum, who was a Republican from Kansas. And so she's a big proponent of getting more women running for office. I think, to me, that's why I was a little bit surprised at the news this morning. I'm not so surprised that she's not running in some respects. She is almost 80 years old, and even though I think the general public thinks that Congress does absolutely nothing, it's really good at getting nothing accomplished, the day-to-day life of a member of Congress is pretty grueling and taxing. And so I think maybe she's just tired. Maybe she's ready to move on and do some other things. But yeah, in terms of women in politics, it's sort of a sad day. She is definitely a pioneer. She's a fierce advocate for women's rights. And so it's going to be interesting to see who is willing to take up that mantle in the U.S. Senate.
You know, according to WIPR's Chris Connolly, she dispelled this idea that it's too frustrating to work in Washington these days with the super partisanship. She may say that publicly, but I've talked to a member of Congress, a member of the U.S. Senate, both who have expressed to me how frustrating it is, things they wouldn't say necessarily on the microphone in the way they said it privately. You know, they use different different language privately, and it sounds awful. It sounds, especially if you're a Democrat right now, it's hard to get anything done. So when you look at Barbara Mikulski's career stretching back to 1976 in Congress, these last few years might have been the toughest, even if she was a ranking, member, but chair of budget.
Well, it's different if you're the chair of the Appropriations Committee. Even if you have problems dealing with the U.S. House, at least you can get your proposals through the Senate. But now she's the ranking minority member of the Appropriations Committee, which means she doesn't have the votes to get anything approved. She's part of the blocking movement to stop the Republicans from passing conservative measures.
Yeah, it's a lot less fun when you're in that position than it is to be in the majority. Well, I would just add another hypothesis. I was trying to think as to why we have the timing here of Mikulski announcing her resignation, or her retirement, I should say. She's not resigning, she's retiring. But, you know, I was thinking about the Electoral College math, thinking about future elections. So if she were to run again in 2016, I actually think she'd win handily. She's just a legend in Maryland politics, so I don't think anyone could really defeat her. But she'd be up for re-election again in 2022, and I'm assuming at that point she would probably want to retire because she'd be in her mid-80s at that point. That's a midterm election year, and I think that those years are less favorable to Democrats. I mean, we just saw this last fall, right, when Larry Hogan won the gubernatorial election with a record low turnout. And so that might be another factor that she's also mulling over, that maybe this would be a good time to leave because we can be pretty sure that a Democrat's going to win the seat in 2016.
Well, I have to ask this, and before I do, I want to welcome Matt Crenson onto the phone, too, with Melissa Deckman, who's on the phone with us. Frazier Smith's listening, and we'll get some more comments from Frazier. Matt Crenson, political science professor emeritus at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much for joining us today, Matt. So here's my question. Considering Mikulski's influence, considering that there seems to be agreement that she would win re-election pretty easily in Maryland, you don't think there's some sort of brokered deal here with her announcing that she's not going to run and making an agreement to support one of these candidates already? I'll go to you, Matt, on that.
Yeah, it has occurred to me. I'm wondering whether perhaps it wasn't something explicit, but just understood. I mean, the person who's out there right now is Martin O'Malley, who's already carried statewide elections twice. He'd be a good prospect here. And she may have decided that he's the candidate who could win in the Democratic field and then carry the state against the Republicans. So I thought that might be a consideration in the timing of her announcement.
Okay.
But, of course, then there's going to be a response from the other candidates.
Yeah.
Which is, here's a guy who declared himself seriously for president. All of a sudden, another opportunity opens up, and he leaps at it.
Yeah.
We want a rank opportunist to represent us in the Senate instead of a secret opportunist.
Yeah, interesting, Matt. Let's hear from Melissa on that, then get Barry's comments.
Yeah, I want to say something about the O'Malley-Mikulski connection. I think it's important to remember that Martin O'Malley really got his start with his political career. It started with Barbara Mikulski. So I think in many respects, he considers her to be a true mentor. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe she's stepping aside to let him have the seat, because I think the odds of him pulling off this sort of upset in the Democratic presidential election are becoming smaller and smaller. And I think that this would be a natural path for him to go in terms of building a platform and running for higher office later on.
Hmm. Now, Barry, I'm not a big fan of conspiracies. I'm just like, I know that deals get made. So
I'm even a lesser fan of conspiracies. I don't think there's any deal whatsoever.
Okay.
She may have tipped off O'Malley that she was going to do this, but that's about as far as she would go. You have to remember, almost everybody on this list of wannabes for U.S. Senate are close friends of Mikulski's politically. You know, they're allies of Mikulski's.
Right.
She's not going to stab them in the back. She's not going to try to name her successor, because it won't work. You also have to remember, as far as Martin O'Malley is concerned, we just went through an election where O'Malley fatigue played an instrumental part in electing a Republican. In the U.S. Senate primary race, will there be O'Malley fatigue again? Will some of his opponents remind people of this?
It's only about a year away.
Exactly. So this is no sure thing if Martin O'Malley gets in it, especially if the state starts to get chopped up by a Montgomery County candidate who is popular, an African-American candidate who is popular. Suddenly, O'Malley's base starts to shrink.
I want to go back to Matt Crenson so that our listeners can hear you reflect a little bit about Barbara Mikulski's career. We touched on it a little bit here, you know, starting off in as a community activist, a social worker, moving to the Baltimore City Council and on from there. But, Matt, your reflections on her years in public service.
They've been quite remarkable. I mean, she started out as the daughter of bakery owners in southeast Baltimore. And in fact, handed out her campaign literature for the city council on the sidewalk in front of the bakery. And worked away from there, preceding Martin O'Malley in the city council, then to Congress, then to Senate, where, as somebody already pointed out, she's been the longest-serving woman member of Congress, and a spokesman for women, especially her equal pay legislation. And she's become a kind of icon, not just in Maryland, but across the country. She has her own distinctive persona that's not like anybody else in the U.S. Senate.
No one else in Maryland politics either.
Right. No. I should add, one name which I haven't heard mentioned here yet as a possible candidate is Ken Ullman. He's got nothing to lose. He's, as a result of the failed campaign of Anthony Brown, his name is known across the state. And I think he's a possibility, too.
Hmm.
One of the difficulties that people like Ken Ullman and Heather Mazur would face is the enormous expense of running this race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real challenge. It stopped Ken Ullman in his bid to be governor.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see if he does decide, as Matt said, to take the plunge this time.
Here's an email from Frederick. Catherine writing in to say, I would really like to see Heather Mazur run for Barbara Mikulski's seat. In addition to all the issues Mazur stands for, we need someone to continue support for women's issues. I'm going to take a break here. We'll come back and talk some more. We welcome phone calls about Barbara Mikulski's announcement today. 410-662-8780. Melissa Deckman from Washington College. Matt Crenson, Professor Emeritus at Johns Hopkins, who's working on a book about Baltimore politics. Just about done, too, he says, is with us. And Barry Raskovar from Political Maryland. 410-662-8780. This is a good time to comment on Mikulski's announcement. And what do you think of Mikulski's tenure as a senator and a member of Congress before that? Our midday email address is midday@wypr.org. Comments on Facebook about Barbara Mikulski. Nancy says her tenacity is an inspiration, and it will be difficult for someone to fill her shoes. And Steve says, and the upcoming race to fill her shoes will be tumultuous. More drama than I care to endure, but that's just me. But that's politics. Actually, it'll make it a lot more interesting year than we had anticipated, Barry.
I think the one term that was applied to Barbara Mikulski more than any other was feisty.
Yeah.
And I think people ought to look up the word feisty in the dictionary.
Yes.
Or Google it, because
there's
it does.
There's a picture of Mikulski right next to it.
Yes. It doesn't mean what you think it does. Yeah. It means you have a nasty streak, and she does. But that's part of her charm also.
Diminutive also for the 4'11" Baltimore native Barbara Mikulski, who announced today that she's not going to be running for re-election next year. Melissa Deckman is with us from Washington College. And Matt Crenson, Professor Emeritus from Hopkins. I'm going to let you go so we can take some calls from our listeners here. But, Matt, your thoughts about this lineup of possible replacements for Barbara Mikulski that you heard you heard Barry's list, and you added Ken Ullman to it. This could be a real free-for-all.
Yeah, it could be chaotic. And I think one of the risks for Democrats is they'll become so divided during the course of the primary that they won't be in good shape to face whoever the Republican candidate is.
Well, I think
whoever the Republican candidate is.
Yes. Well, two names have been mentioned, obviously. Mm-hmm. Andy Harris.
Yeah.
And a guy named Ehrlich.
Yep.
Very interesting.
So you could end up with a third Ehrlich O'Malley contest.
Yes. And
I'm tired thinking about that right now. I'm just exhausted.
Well, I think one of them
not
is...
Not again.
We have a governor now who won by... strenuously declaring he was a moderate Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whoever runs on the Republican side this time is probably going to have to do the same if they have any hope of victory.
Yes, especially since this election takes place in a presidential year.
Exactly.
Which means you're going to have the largest turnout of the four-year cycle, which always is going to favor the Democrats in Maryland.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you.
Melissa Deckman, yeah, that's interesting. A moderate Republican, that's not a term people would attach to Andy Harris.
No, I think he has attached himself to the conservative wing of the GOP, and I just think he cannot win statewide, especially in a presidential election year. He just doesn't have the support, I think, among voters. I laughed about Ehrlich before, but I think that Ehrlich won his one term in office as a Republican governor when he did run as a centrist, right? He ran these campaigns kind of talking about how he was pro-choice and that social issues should be off the table and talking about economic concerns. So, and he's actually been making the rounds on the presidential circuit.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, on much lower level than I think some of the other bigwigs you've seen at CPAC in the last week and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think if there's anyone that really has statewide name recognition, it's Bob Ehrlich. No one else really comes close. I was kind of racking my brain thinking about possible Republican contenders, and it's hard to really find one that has good name recognition that could actually win.
But I think what we've seen in the last two times a Republican has won an election statewide in Maryland is that you have to have a very weak Democratic candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that happening this time so far, other than maybe Heather Mazur. I know some of your listeners don't want to hear this, but I think she's way too far to the left. Donna Edwards may also be too far to the left for, say, Baltimore County voters to get excited about her. I think other than those folks, the rest of the Democratic nominees are pretty mainstream and could easily carry the state in a presidential year.
You know, you keep coming back to Baltimore County. It's not a joke, though. This is important. There's a piece of Baltimore County that is a great bellwether for an election, statewide election.
Yes. I mean, it's been the bellwether for most close statewide elections as far back as I can remember.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Kathleen in Timonium on Barbara Mikulski announcing her retirement. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. How are you doing, Dan?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm really, really sorry to see Barbara Mikulski going. We both went to the same high school. I wasn't in her year. I didn't know her personally. But even as a registered Republican, I love Barbara Mikulski. I think she has more integrity than most members have in their little toe. She's kind of a bulldog. She'll fight for whatever she thinks is right. And if I have a problem, I go right to Barbara. My only consolation is that she's retiring instead of resigning, and I can still call on her at least until 2017.
Thank you for your comments, Kathleen. Kimberly, posting on Facebook, says, I have always admired her spunk. At 78 years young, she still has a great love for Maryland and its people. Andrea says, oh, man, she's done great things for Maryland with a good heart. If you have comments about Barbara Mikulski, please call up, give us, share them with us, 410-662-8780. And Melissa Deckman did not grow up in Maryland, did not grow up with Barbara Mikulski, did you?
I did.
Oh, you are you a Marylander?
I grew up in Harford County, sir.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I wanted to get your reflections on, you know, seeing her from a distance and then being a constituent. But I didn't realize you'd grown up here in Maryland.
I did. So I remember when she was first elected to the Senate. So this would have been
1987.
1987.
Well, 86 election against Linda Chavez.
Yeah, and so she's always been one of my senators as a voting person. So I'm 44. So yeah. My first election was 1992, but she's always been one half of the Senate delegation for me. So I'm very familiar with her.
One of the things that Maryland is going to miss the most is Barbara Mikulski's willingness to directly confront the powers that be in the Congress to get whatever it is that Maryland needs, or to confront the administration and to not mince words.
Mm-hmm.
She'll do it quietly behind the scenes, but she will be blunt. She will be direct. She will be honest. She will lay them out if necessary. You know, Ben Cardin can be a very effective legislator, but he's a more quiet diplomatic type. It helps to have somebody who is going to put her face directly in your face and force you to make a decision you may not want to make.
Let's take another call. Fred in Baltimore, you're on Midday. Go right ahead, please.
I just wanted to point out that Congressman Van Hollen worked both for Senator Mathias for 2 years as part of his foreign policy team just after graduate school, and then for, I believe it was Mayor Schaefer at the time in his Washington office before he became a congressman. So I think he has a good knowledge of Baltimore's politics and the statewide interests.
Hmm. Yeah, well, he's near the top of Barry's list, actually, right?
Yes, by all means.
But
I heard him referred to as a Montgomery County congressman. I think he has a much better knowledge of the state of Maryland and the problems of the city of Baltimore.
Right, you're right.
I would add, too, about Chris Van Hollen. I think he actually is a potentially quite a powerful candidate because his stock has really risen in the House, even though, of course, he's still in the minority there. But, you know, he's a frequent guest on the Sunday talk shows. I think he comports himself quite well. He has sort of a centrist economic kind of position that would, I think, you know, serve him well at a statewide electorate during the presidential election year. So, and I think he can raise money. So I actually think that he is someone to seriously consider. If you're looking at all of these potential candidates running, I think he has a really good shot.
Yeah, at the same time, he's got to balance what's best for his career because he's now in a position that he is a key Nancy Pelosi lieutenant, and he may well be in a position where he can possibly succeed her or become the number two person in the House down the road if he stays.
Yeah.
So it's he's got a real difficult choice to make.
He was chairman of the Democratic Congressional Reelection Committee, wasn't
twice.
He?
Mm-hmm.
Twice.
So, twice.
Yeah, so Melissa's right. He's good at raising money for others.
Yes.
And could probably raise money himself.
Yes, he's made nationwide contacts
so
that he can now draw on if he runs in the U.S. Senate. He's also always been a very ambitious person. He was an excellent state legislator in Annapolis for, I think, 12 years. The problem he's going to face is can he draw enough votes from the Baltimore metropolitan area?
You know, your list, Barry, and everyone seems to agree on this list, Chris Van Hollen, Elijah Cummings, Donna Edwards, John Sarbanes, John Delaney, Tom Perez, maybe, Heather Mazur, Martin O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, Mikulski would probably have to endorse one of them, right?
No.
No, she wouldn't.
No, I think she'd avoid it.
She would avoid a primary endorsement.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why I think, in fact, her endorsement of Anthony Brown was pretty surprising to me, because she normally stays out of that kind of stuff. And, you know, he lost despite that. But I would say that she'd probably steer very clear of it. Because I think her aspirations, she didn't really, I think, go on at length about this in her announcement, but I think she wants to have an influence on public policy. And so why alienate, you know, your successor if the person you choose ends up not winning? So I think she would stay out of it, in public at least.
Here's a call from Annapolis. Stu, you're on Midday. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a couple of things to say. One, I knew Barbara back in the old days during the highway battle and even before that. And I think one of the things that gave her credentials was that the battle against the highway was something that cut across ethnic, racial, and class lines. And she plugged into a movement that reflected a very populist issue in Baltimore City, and she's conducted herself that way in all, you know, throughout her elected career.
Hey, Stu, do you mind just reminding us about where that highway was supposed to go specifically? It was going to go across the harbor, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, it was three highways. It was 95, 70, and 83, I think. And the original plan, which was supported by Donald Schaefer, was to have a bridge, a 16-lane bridge, go through the Inner Harbor area. So if that highway had come to be, we would not have Harbor Place as it is now.
So 95 would have come down and cut through Canton on the way toward the Inner Harbor.
Yeah, and then it would have gone out west through the Franklin Mulberry Corridor, right, and then through Leakin Park.
Right. I remember seeing the sketches or diagrams of how this was going to look, and I was very thankful that Barbara Mikulski and everybody else managed to fight that. But that's why we have the highway to nowhere, right, Barry?
Correct.
Route 70 was not completed because of this battle.
Absolutely, that's exactly what happened. I mean, this was a prelude to later anti-highway fights.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it succeeded, thanks to Mikulski. Because downtown would be, just one big speedway,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. And Stu, you wanted to say one other thing?
Yeah, well, this is a little off topic. It's on the highway, but I think the success of the Anti-Highway Coalition was due to the fact that it didn't represent just one segment of Baltimore. The people in the Rosemont area joined in the battle, and although Rosemont was destroyed because there was a quick take, the fact that the battle was represented by people, like I say, white, black, rich, poor,
mm-hmm.
was what gave it its credence. And it's one of the few inner city highways that was stopped by a movement of the people. And although Barbara was a leader in this thing, the anti-highway was pretty much like the civil rights movement. It was a very populist movement, and it was a true mass movement in Baltimore.
Stu, thank you for that call. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Yeah, and for Melissa, the political scientist, and Barry, it's really interesting story to think about the launching of a political career that's lasted this long on something like that, stepping up, getting involved in a big effort, a populist effort, as Stu said, nonetheless. I bet you can go find other politicians who just sort of establish who they were, their persona, on one event or one series of events of activism.
If I, you know, thinking over it very quickly, I would compare her to a politician like Fiorella LaGuardia, a very, very colorful character,
mm-hmm.
very outspoken.
Became New York City mayor.
And became New York City mayor. Before that was a congressman,
mm-hmm.
And is regarded as possibly the best mayor the city, New York City, has had. But the point is that Barbara Mikulski knows how to be colorful. She knows how to be charismatic.
She does.
And in today's media-savvy world, if you're not colorful, you're
right.
not going to get very far. But if you are colorful, you can go far.
Well, actually, Melissa, I was going to say, for someone who didn't come of age in the digital age, Barbara Mikulski, she's a perfect soundbite politician, actually. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I would just say about Barbara Mikulski and why her leaving is such a loss for the institution is she's extremely authentic. And she
is very true to herself and has a life story that I think many Americans can relate to. I mean, increasingly, if you look at surveys, for example, of people that serve in the U.S. Senate, most of them are millionaires. You know, she was a social worker. She took a very different path that was very grassroots and populist. And you don't really hear that story very often, I think, in American politics. And so for that reason, I think it's a loss for the Senate in general that she's leaving.
Well, look, you know, if you wanted to run for the U.S. Senate today, if you were a millionaire, like Melissa says, you can do it that way. You don't have to be an activist. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have to be out and be identified with a particular movement or anything.
Well, you know, I think even people that oppose Mikulski politically, you know, Republicans. Your caller was a great example. There was a self-described Republican who is a big fan of Barbara Mikulski would acknowledge that. I think Barbara Mikulski truly cares about Marylanders and the city of Baltimore, and that's really her passion. And I think that's shown through in many decades of public service.
But she's blue collar. She's blue collar, and when she goes out into the suburbs, she lets them know that she's blue collar, and they can identify her with her. Mm-hmm. They can identify with her very quickly. And it's very rare that you have a politician who can do that. But she has that knack. She really does.
I would also, too, it's a loss for, I think, women in politics, given her leadership position and the way that she prioritizes women's rights and also is a very big public advocate for getting more women involved in politics. But I think it's also a loss for labor. You know, she's a very big proponent of workers' rights and workers. And I know that, there are fewer and fewer Americans who belong to labor unions, but I think about all sort of the labor union bashing, people like Scott Walker and others. But to lose her voice, I think, is also very detrimental to organized labor in this country.
I was telling Barry when we were off the air briefly, I had mentioned that phrase, industrial strength environmentalist. I'm an industrial strength environmentalist, I heard her say. Well, that was some years ago now, I forget, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, when the Senate was considering the efficiency standards for automobiles, the gasoline efficiency standards. And we still had Chevy products being built down on Browning Highway, and she was concerned that an effort to push too hard against Detroit for these higher efficiency standards may result in losing a big contract for some vans that they were building down on Browning Highway. So she parted ways with liberal and, well, actually the mainstream Democrats on that. She actually parted ways with them on that. So it wasn't always a case of always voting on the left and always having...
No, but for Barbara Mikulski, Baltimore always has come first, and Maryland has come second, and then comes the Democratic Party.
Yeah, in that particular case, that was about labor, and she took the side of labor, the unions that actually didn't want to push very hard against Detroit, whatever year that was down there. So anyway, we're about out of time here. Some closing thoughts, Barry, and then Melissa.
Well, this is going to be one incredible race to the finish.
Yeah.
I think you're going to be fascinated. It's going to be fascinating to see who decides to jump in first and then how long they last.
Right.
because, again, you know, if your congressional seat is what you're giving up in order to run against maybe four or five people for the U.S. Senate, you got to think twice and three times and four times before you actually agree to do it. So I think there's going to be some false starts. But I would keep my eye on Van Hollen. I would keep my eye on Martin O'Malley.
Excuse me, one last thing before I get to Melissa. No Dutch on your list?
At Dutch's age, I don't think so. Dutch usually likes a sure thing, and this is too much of a scramble. This is scrambled eggs. It really is.
Melissa?
Well, I think for all of us political junkies, the 2016 just got a lot more interesting, certainly. I would say this, though. I'm interested to see what Barbara Mikulski does, you know, after this act. You know, she has talked about advocacy, but it will be interesting to see what path she decides to choose once she actually leaves office.
Melissa Deckman, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Melissa Deckman is chair of political science at Washington College and joins us from time to time to talk politics on Midday, as does Barry Raskavar. You can find Barry's blog, Political Maryland, on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Barry, thank you very much for jumping in today.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, everybody. And the Midday on Health segment with Dr. John Smarr that was originally scheduled for this hour, we'll reschedule that and let you know when Dr. Smarr will be here again. Have a great afternoon, everybody. See you again tomorrow.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richmond, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.